that paper is the foundation for what EcoCert, for example, or the Cosmos standard is based on. So they didn't just kind of say it all has to be organic or, you know, potentially organic. They actually used a reference point. And so in my opinion, if it doesn't meet that criteria, I don't think it should be used. I don't think we should be making things that are either topically or environmentally destructive.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chantal Soutarson. I'm a French beauty journalist, and I'm your host on Beauty Toaster, the first French beauty and wellness podcast. My guest on this very first English-speaking episode is Gay Timmons, the founder of OO Organic, a company specialized in providing the cosmetic industry with raw organic ingredients. If you want to know all about sustainability, preservatives, and the future of cosmetics, this is the place to be. Hope you'll enjoy it. Hi, Gay.
Hi, Chantal.
I must tell you, I feel really honored to have you on Beauty Toaster today, especially because you're a renowned scientist in the cosmetic world. And also because you're my first English-speaking guest.
I'm so honored to be your first English-speaking guest.
Oh, thank you. I'm so proud.
I am. I'm very impressed. Thank you.
So, Gay, can you tell us what is your specialty? What is your background?
Educationally, I have a couple of degrees. I started off as an anthropologist.
Okay.
Because why not?
Yeah, why not?
And later on, I went back to school and I got a master's degree in physiology. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I had become involved with agriculture in California because it's the main thing we do there besides tech. And I started working with farmers and working with organic agriculture. So my background really has been 30 years of working with California farmers and then farmers all over the world who produce organically. And what I really ended up specializing in is oil. So I know a lot about natural oils that, you know, everything from essential oils through all of the palm oils and coconut oil and sunflower oil and anything that comes from a plant.
Okay.
It has to come from a plant.
Mm. And it's only in the cosmetic field or?
For 10 years, I sold organic ingredients into the food industry. And I had made the decision that I didn't want to make a living any way that was going to be environmentally destructive. And so in 1991, that was it. Mm. All of my sales were focused on selling organic ingredients. And then 10 years later, not even 10, in 1998, I started working with the cosmetic industry.
Okay. And so you live in California, as you said. Yeah. And according to you, beauty and ecology are tied. What do you mean?
Anything you put on your body goes down the drain.
Yeah, of course.
And then that water goes back into the environment. And it may end up in soil. It may end up in our waterways all over the world. When I walk down a street in a major city, especially a place like New York with all the high-rises, all I can imagine is all these people putting all these different things on their bodies and then all of them taking a shower every day and all of that stuff going back into the environment. And that's one aspect of it. The other half of that on the ecological side or on the environmental side is that when we use up resources, they are used up.
Yes.
So organic farming is based on the premise of renewable resources.
Okay. And what is the cosmetic situation in the US right now? Here people turn more and more to organic, clean beauty. They are very suspicious about ingredients. Mm-hmm. Is it the same in the US?
Yes, very much so. I'd say that there are kind of two categories. overall, you know, if you stand back and you're a marketer, you look at the demographics. So they talk about the millennials and the Gen Xers, and they tend to be far more focused on, as a buying group, on safety, renewability, environmental impact of where materials come from. Other parts of that demographic, maybe somebody, you know, maybe they don't think about it and then they get pregnant, or their mother gets breast cancer, or a member of their family. So I think illness and pregnancy seem to be two big factors there, and then just overall the environmental concerns that so many people have. So in the U.S., I'd say it's exactly the same. I'm seeing increasing growth, and you can see it worldwide, Japan, Korea, all of Asia. It's even starting in India a bit.
Really?
Which is, yeah. South America is becoming a strong market. So, yeah, it's the same everywhere.
It's the same everywhere.
Yeah.
And now we're going to speak about beauty apps. You have beauty apps in, in the US.
Yeah.
And here in France, people, as I said, have lost confidence in cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
And even more with those beauty apps, since those beauty apps appeared. So is it the same in the US? Do people check every single cosmetic item they want to buy?
They do it in a couple different ways. One of the things, they do use beauty apps. They're a little frustrating, I would say, because I don't think they have evolved to be as useful. Mm. And there's so much information. You know, there's over 65,000 cosmetic ingredients. So that's a lot of data. And they are made slightly differently by every single, you know, if you might have five different companies that make the exact same chemical that, say, some kind of surfactant for shampoo or something, but they're all going to make it slightly differently. They'll all have different raw materials that they use to make it. So the apps are limited in what they can do. One of the big differences I see between the U.S. and most of the European countries is we have a lot of retailers who are green or clean.
Oh, yeah.
Retailers.
Mm.
And you can go online and look at Credo, Beauty, Folane.com, Detox, the Detox Market.
Okay.
Aaliyah, just to name four, but there are many others.
Okay.
And they each carry many, many, many brands, and they have their own rules for how they vet. So it gives a consumer a certain amount of confidence because they can just go there and know that everything there has been examined in terms of safety, at least for safety.
Safety.
And frequently, in some of the others are more stringent about environmental impact. I'd say Aaliyah and Folane particularly is very, very stringent. So is Aaliyah.
Okay.
Credo is maybe not as stringent, but they're very clear on their website. So if you, and in their labeling. So if you go to the store and you say, I don't want one thing or another, it's very easy for you to see whether or not you're getting that.
Okay.
So we have that as a more available resource, I would say.
Okay. So we don't have the equivalent. Well, it's starting here, but it's very small.
Yeah.
It's very small.
But I think it will. It's sort of exploded in the U.S. over about a three-year period.
Okay.
So it doesn't take long. Once the consumers start to demand.
Of course. Yeah. The retailers follow.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think some ingredients should be banned from cosmetics and why?
Yeah. Now I'm a little more stringent than most.
Yeah.
I have a very simple definition of what a green cosmetic is. There was a paper written by a couple of brilliant chemists in 1996 or 98, I can never remember, named John Warner and Paul Anossis. They wrote a paper called The 12 Principles of Green Chemistry. So that paper scientifically addresses the method of making new chemicals, because you need them. We can't just have oil and sugar and essential oil. It's not enough. We need surfactants. We need emulsifiers. We need many things to make things work.
Yeah, of course.
Mm. And so having well-defined what environmentally sound chemical production is in that 12 principles of green chemistry paper, if you use those principles and you use renewable inputs, which you can, we're pretty sure that you can do that, then you can make pretty much whatever you need. That paper is the foundation for what EcoCert, for example, or the Cosmos standard is based on.
Okay.
So they didn't just kind of say it all has to be organic or, you know, potentially organic. They actually used a reference point.
Okay.
And so in my opinion, if it doesn't meet that criteria, I don't think it should be used. I don't think we should be making things that are either topically or environmentally destructive.
All right. So after parabens, phenoxyethanols is the new target of French consumers. They don't believe in the so-called safety usage level. What do you think? Are they right?
Honestly, I haven't read enough of the research to know. One thing I do know is, you know, we're talking a lot about the microbiome, and things like phenoxyethanol damage your microbiome. So from that perspective, we need to do a lot more work on preservatives.
Okay.
And we have to have preservatives because we don't want bacteria to grow in our products.
Especially if you have water and most of the products you have, water.
Where there's water, there is life.
Yeah.
So I always remind people of that. Bacteria, yeast, and mold.
Yeah.
So we have to have a way to control that. And I think there probably are some good reasons to be concerned about phenoxyethanol. And we know there are for quite a few, most of the parabens. So I think we'll continue to learn. This is very much an evolving, changing landscape.
Yeah, of course, yes. And by the way, as a French consumer, if I go to the US and I buy an American cosmetic, like, for instance, an organic cream, is there a chance I could find ingredients that are banned here in Europe?
It depends. I think it's pretty rare, quite honestly. Nobody wants to make something that's going to hurt somebody. Now, and I've read through the banned list because I've done a lot of working with American brands who wanted to have their products reviewed for the EU market.
Yeah.
And we never came across, you know, huge problems. Hmm. They were always very minor, and usually they had to do with labeling, not with ingredients.
Okay.
So I don't think that's really a big problem, but there are a lot of imported things to the United States, and those are the ones I don't know anything about. You know, there's a lot of stuff that comes in from Asia.
Yeah.
And so I would be concerned about that. I think good brands do good research, and generally they're going to be safe within their definition of safe, which is not my definition of safe. But it mostly is going to meet the EU definition.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But also you said an organic. Mm. So organic is a problem because you have to ask if it's certified. If it's certified, it's going to be very clean. Mm. If it's not certified, then you have to read the ingredients. So in the United States, the general attitude is the buyer needs to be informed.
Okay, yeah. And you don't have the same standards as in Europe. You don't have like a Cosmos or Natru. Is it going to change? Is it an important topic for you?
I am not seeing a lot of people get certified to those standards. I think companies who really want to differentiate themselves are. You'll find plenty of Cosmos certified products. I think that Jane Iredell brand is all Cosmos, and she's a fairly large brand. She's well distributed. There's a lot of other brands that are like that. And then there are a lot of companies where there's no requirement to be certified.
Yeah. Mm.
And I don't know even that you all are required. The safety assessment law said that once they established an ISO standard, for organic and natural, they would require certification. But that standard ended up being quite weak.
Yeah.
So the Cosmos or Natru are much better standards. Mm. But I don't see that there's even a huge number here.
No.
Mm. So
it costs money.
Yeah, but again, it comes back to the consumer.
Yeah.
So the consumers need to demand this.
Mm. And which are the most popular ingredients at the moment in the US?
Argan. It's always argan oil, rosehip oil. For me, I always work with the organic ingredients, so that's all I know about. People still love coconut oil. Overall, the growth that I'm seeing is the exotic oils. So,
yeah. Okay.
So everything that is, you know, everybody wants something special and new. Mm. Mm. So a lot of the African oils, okay. the South American, the copaiba, murumuru, that kind of thing.
Okay.
All the stuff, you know, coming out of Africa is really interesting. So, yeah, I that's where the growth is.
Okay. And I've heard that the farm-to-face trend is a big thing in the U.S. Can you explain in a few words what it is? And is it like organic? Is it different? Is it just marketing?
Well, I think usually when you make that claim, you can track it back to an actual farm. And the only way most people can do that is if it is organic, because you have to, in order to be certified organic, you have to track it back to the farm. So, for example, my company is based on, I just represent specific farms who grow, or not farms, but processors who may work with multiple farms.
Okay.
So they grow, process, and then I sell their ingredients into the cosmetic industry. They probably sell them into the food industry. So these are food ingredients that are now being used on the face, and that's why it's farm to face.
Okay.
So I think that's really, you know, how they're using it marketing-wise, but almost anybody who buys ingredients from me could do that easily.
Yeah. Mm. And a friend of mine told me that cosmetic DIY is a big thing in California right now. Here it's getting bigger and bigger too. Mm-hmm. Do you think it could be the future of beauty, of one of the aspects of beauty in the future?
That's where all the new brands are coming from. I think if you're good at it and if you stick with it and you start giving things to your friends for Christmas, which is how one of the larger brands I work with, that's how she started.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said this, she had a very sensitive skin. She had all kinds of issues. And she made this beautiful line of lip products and skin products. And they were all Hanhydra. So she was buying ingredients off of websites and doing everything at home.
Okay.
And she turned it into a business. So there are all kinds of classes. There's a huge green cosmetic online series of programs. There's one out of New York called the New York Institute of Aromatherapy. They have online streaming classes. There's another one that's out of England.
Okay.
And I want to say it's not the organic chemist.
I haven't heard.
It's not Barbara, who we had dinner with the other night. It's not her program, but there is another program that teaches online classes. And then there's another one I know of that...
On DIY.
Yeah, that's all DIY. You just go online and you can go on YouTube or there's streaming classes where you actually pay for the classes.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's very popular.
Yeah.
And it's fun and it teaches you a little bit of chemistry. So that's good for you.
Yeah.
I think learning a new thing. Mm. I don't think it's ever going to replace the cosmetic industry.
Of course not. Mm. And would it be possible to have absolutely green, clean beauty products, safe for us, but also for the planet?
Absolutely.
You think?
Uh-huh.
That is possible?
Oh, yeah. I think there are a lot of brands that are like that right now.
Hmm.
And I think that just depends on the knowledge and commitment of the founder of the business. But there are, in those stores that I mentioned, you could go there and probably most of their brands are like that. So they're looking at both topical and environmental safety, which is, again, that's my criteria. And I think most of my customers take that position.
Okay. So that's a big challenge for the beauty industry, you think?
I think it's very hard for the conventional industry to adopt that attitude, because they look at the chemicals they've been using for many years, most of which include a lot of petroleum products, and they say, oh, it's safe. And it's not environmentally sound. I'm not convinced that they are entirely safe. I think that's what most consumers, many younger consumers especially, feel.
Do you think that there will be international standards? Do you think that animal testing will be banned from the planet one day?
Well, we banned it in California. Yeah. You banned it in the EU.
In the EU.
And we banned it in California. And the Chinese, who were requiring it before they would allow it, have just announced that they are going to accept a computer model instead of actual animal testing. So I think we're definitely going in the right direction with that regard. And I think standards overall, as an industry, which includes the consumers, you know, the consumers need to be very clear, and the chemists and the scientists need to be very clear, and we need to have a public conversation, and increasingly that's happening. I was just at in cosmetics, a big cosmetic ingredient show that was in Paris this year, and the reason I went was because that's part of my personal mission. As an organization, they put on a big summit, and so we met and had discussions about having the next summit be about defining sustainability, and that would address both topical and environmental safety as well as the broader issues of sustainability, because right now everybody uses that word in a slightly different way.
Yeah, of course.
And to me, if you're hurting people, that's not sustainable.
Of course not.
Pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty simple.
So, you know, like all things, it's... We have to evolve.
Yeah, it's got to.
And we have to be very clear.
Yeah. Thank you, Gay.
You're welcome.
This was Beauty Toaster. Merci for listening to our chat. Do not hesitate to rate and review Beauty Toaster on Apple Podcasts. It will help other listeners to discover and maybe enjoy it. And please follow us on Instagram to know about the next episodes, especially those in English. À bientôt! Merci de nous avoir écoutés. Si ça vous a plu, abonnez-vous sur Apple Podcasts et n'hésitez pas à nous laisser un avis et surtout une note. 5 étoiles, ce serait génial. Beauty Toaster est diffusé sur toutes les bonnes plateformes de podcast, sur les applis de musique à la demande et sur le blog beautytoaster.fr. Pour être informé des nouveaux épisodes, c'est facile, ils sont annoncés sur le compte Instagram et la page Facebook de Beauty Toaster. Suivez-nous. En attendant, passez une bonne semaine et rendez-vous mercredi prochain à 7h.